In a worst-case scenario for Chris Licht, which certainly seems more likely in the wake of this Atlantic piece, possibly laying the groundwork for Chris Licht's departure.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm John Kelly. It's Monday, June 5th, and today I'm here with Dylan Byers where we talk about the double-barreled news coming out of CNN. First, that Zaz Lieutenant Dave Levy is taking over as COO, acting as a sort of Trojan horse looking over the shoulder of Chris Licht. And second of all, the implosion of an Atlantic 15,000-word story on Licht and his tenure, which has everyone in the media talking, blabbing, reading, texting, and wondering just how much longer this is going to last. All that and more on today's episode of The Powers That Be.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Powers That Be. I'm John Kelly, standing in for Peter Hamby one last time for Media Monday, and I'm here with my man Dylan Byers, our expert in, among other things, the dark arts of CNN and the never-ending stream of news that disseminates from Hudson Yards. Dylan, I've been dying to talk to you. I think we've been obsessed in chatting and slacking and texting about the two mega pieces of news that dropped last week. First, on Thursday, the news that Dave Levy, the totally well-liked, and, you know, we both like him, Zaz Lieutenant at Warner Brothers Discovery, suddenly became the COO of CNN, a completely loaded and seemingly Trojan horse-style move. And then, second of all, this long-awaited and deeply overcooked year in the making, Robert Caro-style Tim Alberta profile on Chris Licht, which was clearly intended to be some sort of life-affirming wet kiss, turned out to be an absolute DEFCON 1 disaster. There's so much to talk about, but let's first begin with the Levy of it all. Dylan, I'd love to hear your top-line views and what the people inside Hudson Yards are saying.
Well, I actually wouldn't necessarily, in a way, these two things, or at least the timing of these two things, might be tied together. Levy is a Trojan horse, as you say. I mean, I think the most charitable interpretation of that move is an attempt to send help to somebody who is obviously flailing. But what you have here is you have Levy, a consigliere to David Zaslav, a member of the inner circle, a direct report, effectively taking over the business of CNN. That is everything that is not editorial, the P&L, the money making, the marketing, the PR, the operations.
And just quick asterisk for first time listeners here, Dylan. Dave Levy, love him as we might, is a communications man. He's a former Clinton aide. He's not an MBA or McKinsey guy, right? Like the fact that he's fulfilling that job is in itself deeply unusual. I'm sure that he's deeply connected to Gunnar Wiedenfels, Zaz's CFO, but it's not like they brought in a bean counter or a number cruncher. They brought in a culture air freshener who's got a direct line to the boss, right?
That's right. A culture air freshener and a guy who basically is representative of what Zaslav and Gunnar and those guys want. And a guy who I think would argue that in addition to his sort of, you know, Clinton White House press office bona fides, has 20 years of experience at the company, mm-hmm. at Discovery, and has done a lot in terms of the sort of, you know, obscure building culture at cable networks, which culture is obviously something, more positive culture is something CNN might benefit from right now. But yes, a Trojan horse and a very obvious vote of no confidence in Chris Licht's ability to run the business, which, by the way, as we have long said on the podcast and in our pages, that is never a role for which Chris Licht was qualified. Mm-hmm. And they start, some of the reporting I've unearthed this week, they started a search for a COO more than 2 months ago. And they did, in fact, talk to an executive at ABC Television and made her an offer. She dragged her feet. But this was all sort of a perfunctory search to basically get Levy in there and get a greater grasp on what was going on. And in a worst case scenario for Chris Licht, which certainly seems more likely in the wake of this Atlantic piece, possibly laying the groundwork for Chris Licht's departure. Because what you really have here is more of a, in effect, David Levy is almost a co-CEO now, right? They're going to say he reports up to Chris Licht and that Chris Licht keeps his title and makes all the decisions. But in point of fact, David Levy is going to continue to talk to his close friend and boss, David Zaslav. They will figure out what to do with the business there. And Chris really now is taking on the role more of a creative director or a head of news while keeping the CEO title.
You know, I think you and I and others, we're trying to think of an apt analogy for this, and it's been challenging, though it does seem familiar. The best one I've been able to come up with hails from pro sports. This to me seems like what happens when an owner brings in a new general manager on top of the coach. And the coach gets to keep their job, but you know that the level of scrutiny and the fact that there's a new voice in the room and possibly a new direction and certainly a layering with a direct line to the owner creates the optics and, you know, of what seems like a now or never situation, right? And that's pretty unavoidable. You know, there was a lot of reporting suggesting that this was not even if they were looking beyond their walls for a COO type, there's nothing that leads me to believe that this was a decision that Chris Licht was deeply engaged in. It wasn't rolled out that way.
No, and they are saying that, right? And they are telling everyone that, you know, Chris wanted this and this was his decision. And let's be honest, we're all adults here. It was not. He might have become convinced of the logic of it or seen the logic of it and gotten on board. And surely might have been conveniently coaxed into this idea. But the idea that he this sort of came up with this sweet generous is obviously not true. And now what you have is a, like you said, the general manager and Levy. You also have basically sort of halls, you know, like a hall monitor, right, to figure out what's going wrong there and who need, you know, not only what needs to change, but who needs to change. And Chris really is now a neutered CEO. And, you know, their view at Warner Brothers Discovery, or at least what they'll say, is, you know, this provides an opportunity for a reset. And now Chris can focus on doing what his skill set, which is creating good television. I think the problem, the things that they're going to run up against with this reset is, one, he's already lost nearly the entirety of the organization. And just because they might like Levy, who, as you mentioned, is a very nice, affable guy, doesn't mean they're all of a sudden going to start liking Chris. Second, there has been no evidence in the past 15 months that he actually is still capable of creating good television, because despite his history at Morning Joe and Late Show with Colbert, he hasn't put any wins on the board from a programming perspective yet. And so now he can't say, well, I, you know, was focusing on the restructuring, I was laying people off, I had to do X, Y, and Z. He can only be judged now on what he does on air, because that is all that he is required to do now. And if barring some miraculous turnaround in prime time or some yet another reinvention of the morning show that somehow manages to work, no one is bullish on that. Yeah. Then I think him at the helm becomes sort of impossible to defend.
Yeah, you make a great point, which has been largely underappreciated in the kind of wider aperture discussion about Licht and CNN, which is he's not alone in this conundrum. Warner Brothers Discovery, Zaz, the board, they put him in a position that he'd never been remotely near before. You know, he ran a set and team of a couple hundred people with one principal to make a show, or I guess with Mika and Joe, a couple principals. This is orders of magnitude more complex. And they should have always considered him for this sort of quote-unquote creative director. And when you think back to the earliest days some of the very clear, in retrospect, signs that there were going to be challenges, it came down to the fact that he didn't approach the opportunity like a CEO. If you are a CEO, you're running a strategy, right? You're literally running a multifaceted playbook that focuses on strategically through multiple, you know, parallel work streams, figuring out key both brand building and revenue building exercises, programming the morning, programming the evening, finding costs, dealing with COGS that you can eliminate, figuring out a long-term OTT solution, more integration, et cetera, et cetera. He approached it from the point of view of a creative, which is, I'm going to do a little this, a little that, a little this, a little that. And as a result, things got messy and disorganized very, very quickly. And what they called strategy, quote unquote, and I'm not trying to be critical. We both have a lot of friends in and around that place who we respect and think do very good work. But what they called strategy was really just talking points. And it became very clear very quickly that that's all it was. So now, yes, they are isolating him to focus on the programming decisions. And as you say, there are limitations. And I don't want to get into the Alberta story yet because we have a lot to chew over there. But one thing that has become very clear is there are usually two types of master news broadcaster executive types that can succeed, two sort of personality traits. One is the Jeff Zucker, mega confident, smartest guy in the room, id, where truly you can fill in the insecurity and all the talent with your own extraordinary self-confidence, having succeeded time and time again. And we saw that work. The other is a more Rune Arledge-ish, and you could say, actually, I think Rashida Jones has a little bit of this at MSNBC, a very, very low-key ego where you let the stars be stars and you're able to operate around them. It's a personality that a lot of talent agents actually have. That I think about that often because Licht is somewhere in between. He seems to have both the confidence and a healthy enough ego that has made it very challenging for him to work with the existing talent. And when you look up and down the ranks, they've got the biggest names in the business. Again, in retrospect, it is surprising that they haven't been able even to just move the deck chairs successfully. There are plenty of people inside that building who are very, very qualified for 9 p.m. Why did it take them a year and a half to figure this out? There are many people inside that building who could have made the morning work. Why did he figure out this ensemble? It's very troubling.
I would offer a third category that I think Chris falls into, because I think the confidence you describe is I say this now after 15 months of covering this guy and sitting down with him and running, you know, running at a puck party. It strikes me as a false confidence. It strikes me, in fact, as a confidence masquerading an insecurity for being out of his depth in that job and of needing vindication that he doesn't feel like he has. And this is why one question I might ask, you know, to your point about the Rune Arledge types who let their stars shine, how many profiles have we read of Caitlin Collins or Jake Tapper in the last 15 right. months? And how many profiles have we read of Chris Licht? This guy sat down with James Stewart at the New York Times. He gave Tim Alberta a year's worth of access. And I think he expected hagiography. I think he expected to, I'll break the fourth wall here as we do. Like I recognize that my own coverage has been a part of this story. I think he saw a lot of negative or critical press coming his way. And I think he thought, you know, if I let people in, they'll see that I'm actually saving journalism. And that's not what's happening there. I think that false confidence, as his inner circle became smaller and smaller, brought on a little bit of delusion. And that is how you wind up with a piece like the Tim Alberta piece. And it's how CNN winds up in this moment, I think. And, you know, that sort of paranoia and insecurity ends up coming at the expense of the network and the people who should be the stars, who should be out there shining.
Dylan, you've elegantly done my job for me and created a perfect segue. Let's come back after the break and discuss this biblically long, brutally painful Tim Alberta story on Chris Licht. Back after the break.
I'm I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Dylan, we've been hearing for a long time about this cipher of a Tim Alberta story in The Atlantic. And we've been hearing about it for so long that the Alberta piece has sort of taken on a life of itself. It finally dropped on Friday, and it was a doozy. Inside the meltdown at CNN, CEO Chris Licht felt he was on a mission to restore the network's reputation for serious journalism. How did it all go wrong? And then in 15,000 words, which is, I might have something to say about that, they detail so many of the ways it went wrong. Let me just, again, we'll break the fourth wall here. You spoke in the previous segment about Licht's ego and vulnerability. This was a disaster of a story on every conceivable level. You know, first and foremost, you do see Licht's vanity in this. He wanted the reporter to trail him when he was working out with his trainer at 6 a.m. doing burpees or whatever, or on some elliptical bike. He seemed to stage some speaking event for students. You know, there's this constant talk about how Zaz has his back and blah, blah, blah. You saw an insight into the vanity of the man. But on a deeper level, we know plenty of the people who work at the executive level, this network, who helped put this story on. And you just have to scratch your head and wonder, what were they thinking? Why would you give this level of access, not just to the principal, but to everyone around him, when you know that people in the building are leaking and saying unpleasant things about the person? And what you get is sort of just this, you know, miasma of discontent and outrage. I have to imagine that they must have started to really regret this 6 months ago. But tell me what your impressions are. Tell me what you're hearing. And I'd love to just get your extemporaneous thoughts.
I think that is right. And not only were we expecting it, I think a lot of people who have been following this story have been expecting it. And when it finally came out, there's that blissful 15-minute silence that you get at Thanksgiving dinner while everyone reads the piece. And then all of a sudden, everything blows up and everyone has a perspective. And this one of the smartest, most insightful media executives who I talk to frequently just sent me Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. That is how you arrive at this piece. There was, I think, this sense, again, that this was going to be hagiography, and that if he let someone like Tim Alberta, who for readers who don't know, Tim Alberta is a great journalist who would be among those who would be sympathetic, and in fact states in the piece that he is sympathetic to the mission of trying to make CNN a more centrist forum for respectful political debate from across the spectrum. And so I think he saw in here someone who would come in and write a more sympathetic and glowing profile. But this, the nature of this piece changed a lot because, like we said, he worked on it for about a year. And what it started out as, at least in the conception of the people involved with the story, was going to be something more about this mission to, can you create compelling journalism from the center in these polarized times? But I think as time went on, and I think as Tim Alberta spent time with the subject, it became impossible not to ignore, one, the climate, the morale at CNN, the ratings nosedive, and then not to also, again, like if you are face-to-face with Chris Licht in the gym, you know, to not ignore his own sort of insecurities and his own sort of delusions here. And there's so much about this piece that is telling. And we should note, the reporter has, you know, gets to shape a story the way they want, right? And perhaps there were sympathetic voices at CNN he could have spoken to. And certainly he tried to get an interview with David Zaslav and they backtracked on it and didn't give it to him and only wanted to talk on background. He didn't want to do that, but they did provide a statement, which was not really a ringing endorsement, and he didn't use it. Whatever the case may be, this was a very long but very accurate finger on the pulse assessment of how things stand at CNN. And when the people who are speaking on your behalf are Frank Luntz and your trainer, and there's nothing in there from the people who work for you or the people whom you work, the only guy speaking on your behalf who isn't paid by you is Frank Luntz. It's just it's a really bad and embarrassing look.
There were two other things that really stuck out to me as just chilling moments, really. One, the aforementioned Zaslav decision to not go on the record. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. And I'm sure that Zaz wanted to go on background to be supportive. You know, I do think Zaz feels completely responsible for this decision and is trying to make this work. But that is, you know, Alberta juxtaposed Zaz's sort of walk back, or Nathaniel Brown's walk back of that, with Lick's constant affirmation that Zaz had his back. So that was uncomfortable. But you know what was also deeply uncomfortable to me was watching Licht in action in the control room producing Don Lemon on the morning show. And it goes without saying, this guy works hard. This is a hard job in an impossible situation, in a difficult climate, politically and economically, which is, you know, I think the underappreciated element of this. But watching him get pissed and pissy with Lemon didn't seem to me like CEO behavior. And I felt as though, obviously, I'm sure anchors are prima donnas and control room talk can be a little bit like locker room talk, you know? People are really acting in real time and it's emotional. And of course, Lick, you know, should be in the control room on a new show. He was criticized during the first 6 months for not being there enough. But the way that Alberta portrayed him, he seemed puerile. He didn't seem above it all, and that really stuck out. It was a well placed scene in the story.
It was a well placed scene, and you know, one thing that I've heard repeatedly during the course of my reporting over the last year is people will sort of allude to the way that there have been meetings in which they feel like Chris sort of speaks ill of some of his own reporters, right? Or like criticizes something that they did. And the anecdotes were never really specific enough to report. They were sort of vague. But that is a perfect example. Don, you have a reporter in the room with you, and whether you like it or not, Don Lemon is, you've bet on that horse, right? To achieve success in the mornings. So why are you doing that? There's such an utter lack of self-awareness here, and it is the same lack of self-awareness that thinks it would be good to invite the reporter into the gym and make a joke about how your predecessor couldn't lift these weights. There's just a lack of understanding about how all of this might potentially come off, and it's baffling, truly, to me.
Yeah, baffling is a good word. I felt, and actually I'm sort of speaking here as an editor, that the challenge with giving someone so much access is that they write a story that's so long that can become kind of piecemeal, where it's scene to scene and moment to moment to moment. And there were some themes of the story that got a little bit lost in this. So here's one that I would have emphasized had I been working in the crafting of this, because I think it gets a little bit lost. This situation is impossible for a lot of reasons. Alberta focuses on the political. But the larger complexifier here is that of the 100 people that Alberta spoke to, I bet a large percentage of them would not find the same comfortable professional opportunity outside of CNN. If this were all happening 15 or 20 years ago, people would have walked across the street and gotten a job at MSNBC or maybe a more tame version of Fox or somewhere else in a different economic environment. That is not the case. Every broadcast organization is trying to figure out what a less expensive news operation looks like, and they're all basically following each other. So part of the discontent with Licht is, of course, represented in people's professional frustrations and their own discontent with their own personal situation. But what seems to be to come across deeply in this piece is just how alone this guy is in the building. Alberto references a few times this very small inner circle, and when Dornick is conducting that interview, or you know, sort of being the invisible hand of the interview with Caitlin Collins and Don Lemon, it's clear how far Licht is from his frontline talent. And say what you will about Jeff Zucker, and my God, these guys sure do, but media is a people business and it's a talent business. And you just come away with the sense that this guy is increasingly siloed and speaking to his own audience of one.
He is, and that circle is incredibly small. And I think the tighter the circle gets, the more you sort of out of a sense of necessity really start to drink the Kool-Aid and believe you're yes men and yes women. And again, you do become sort of delusional about how things are actually going. And perhaps after 15 months of coverage from us and others, and then this lengthy Tim Alberta piece, that the truth is too big to ignore.
Well, that's up to Dave Levy. We can put a pin in it there, Dylan. Our pal has got a lot of work ahead of him. But thanks for your insight, as always. The Alberta story was in many ways a tribute to your own reporting. And I certainly got a chuckle about that scene in which Licht is taking all the talent out to dinner. And people are wondering what he's obsessively doing on his phone. And it turns out that he's reading your story. So breaking the fourth wall once and always.
You know, I saw Puck's true influence in Alberta's use of the word defenestrated.
I got a few texts about that too. That's very funny. Yes, it's nice that we can see we can recognize ourselves in the culture. Anyway, Dylan, thanks for chatting. I'll catch up with you next week.
All right, cheers.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.